Hey, what's going on? Happy Wednesday and happy kickoff to the Battle of Alberta. It'll be a raucous affair later this evening. We're all gearing up for it. Bick Nizar, Randy Janda, also Jamie Dodd here on The People Show, and you as well, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox if you want to chime in. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. It's not our rivalry, Randy,
no.
But shaking in excitement for it.
Okay, I'm, you know, I think any hockey fan is excited for it, and I get to cover on Hockey Night in Canada as well, which is like, okay, I got a little bit of a vested interest. But you talked about people being up for it. A lot of people from Calgary and Edmonton, a lot of Albertans that live in British Columbia. I wonder how the bar situation in Vancouver is going to be, because Oilers fans travel well, you know, whether it's a game at Rogers Arena. Flames fans do the same. You go to bars, you know, there's a lot of bars in this city that sometimes are Oiler bars, or you'll see a lot of Oilers fans pop up or Flames fans. I do wonder how that's going to shake out here in Vancouver. I think it's going to be a little rowdy in Vancouver as well.
I'm trying to think of other moments of non-Vancouver sports. Okay, for instance, the Toronto Raptors run.
Yep.
By round two, you know, Kawhi dunks on Giannis, and it's like, okay, got to go watch these games.
For sure. And we were watching, I think, the final together at one of the local ones here.
Yeah.
And it was jam-packed.
It was packed.
And that's not the place we were at was not a sports bar.
No.
It was a pub, just like a.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
it was a little, a little fancier. It's not it's not a sports bar.
And so, again, that's the Raptors. That's basketball. It's Toronto, but people in this community got behind it, supported it, and honestly, it was at times it was hard pressed to find a place to sit at any establishment that was showing games. This is hockey. This is Battle of Alberta. Now, mind you, it is your two biggest rivals, right? There's no rivalry necessarily with the Toronto Raptors. That's long gone and dusted away. This is your biggest rivals. Your two, until recently, your two closest geographic rivals. And one of them, I would say, is the Canucks' biggest rival, the Calgary Flames.
Until the Seattle Kraken figure themselves out.
Yeah. But historically, it's been the Flames. They've had the most playoff battles. And I'm really curious like how people locally are going to react. Are you approaching this as Canucks fans? It's like, oh, just whoever loses and screw that team and one team has to advance or whatever.
Yeah.
Or are you just legitimately excited to watch hockey? And the type of hockey we think we're going to get in this series.
Is it going to be hate watch, which is like, I hope they both lose? You know what? It's kind of like
love that Dave hate watch.
It's like the Dave Chappelle, the haters ball, right? I hate you and I hope you fail, like to both teams. Or are you watching it from a Connor McDavid went off for 14 points in the last round in 7 games, 2 points per game. Johnny Gaudreau and co. are the best line in hockey this year. As a hockey fan, I am intrigued to see who wins, the best player in hockey or the best line in hockey. Obviously, we're vested. We work in the industry. We're going to come with our thoughts of, man, this is a good hockey matchup. There's a lot of drama on the side as well. There's potentially some hate there. But from a fan's perspective, how are you watching it? Are you hate watching it? Or are you, even as a Canucks fan, saying, you know what? Good hockey prevails, and I want to watch this for good hockey.
650, 650. We'll boil it down to this, and feel free to share your thoughts on if it's deeper than just one aspect of it or one pick. But who would you rather?
Ooh.
Who would you rather? We'll boil all the analysis down to just that one question. Who would you rather to advance here?
Okay.
The Edmonton Oilers or the Calgary Flames?
So as a Canucks fan, this is a Vancouverite perspective. I think you have to go Flames. And I know they're the bigger rival.
Mm-hmm.
You just mentioned that. But here's the way I look at it. If you're looking at your rivals and saying, all right, one of these guys has to win, one of them makes it to the Western Conference Final and potentially the Stanley Cup, who has the staying power? Who are good now, but are they good enough for the next 2 or 3 years? The way I look at Calgary right now is, yes, they're good now. They are a complete team now. But beyond this year, they are a total, total work in progress in the sense that you've got some pretty big decisions coming here. Whether Johnny Gaudreau is still on the team. Whether they're a team that's going to be able to keep even superfluous parts like Iman Giapane, who was able to put up points. So there's some question marks with the Calgary Flames this year, which really do make you think, beyond this year, what are they? Whereas on the other side, if I look at the Oilers, if they lose again, and I know it's the second round, if they lose again, that market is in chaos yet again. Drama, chaos, people calling for Ken Holland's head, people saying, how could you not get a goalie if Mike Smith has 1 to 2 bad games? McDavid gives them also long-term staying power. If they make it past this round, Bick, you know what's going to be a problem for the next probably 5 to 7 years? Those Edmonton Oilers. So I know Calgary hurts as the bigger rival, but you got to look long-term. Calgary's not threatening long-term. Edmonton, if they succeed, they stick with the plan. McDavid's happy. That is a problem.
So you're rooting for the candle that has less wick on it. You're like, hey, that one's going to burn out faster. Not to make a Flames reference.
Exactly.
Here, but
well done, by the way.
That one's going to burn out quick. The other one's got some staying power. Douse it with water right now and reignite it years down the road.
Essentially what I'm saying is, if you're a Canucks fan, you want chaos both sides. You know, Calgary wins, there might be some chaos. There might be some, you know, as you mentioned, short-term success. Long-term, who knows what's going to happen there. Edmonton, if they lose, always paranoia on that market. So that's why I go Flames.
A lot of different opinions and different perspectives coming into the inbox.
Just flooded in immediately, right?
Yeah, no, they're wide-ranging and a lot of good reasons. Keep coming in. I will touch on more in just a second. So again, I have no rooted interest in this.
Yeah.
And what's something you guys hear me say often? It's like, I want to root for greatness. As cheap and easy as that is, I do want to root for greatness. And more, not even root for greatness, I want to see greatness. And who's got the highest ceiling in this series? It's Connor McDavid. Simple as that. I like to see things that we've never seen before. And as talented as Johnny Gaudreau is, and as talented as Matt Tkachuk is, and as great as Jacob Markstrom is, Connor McDavid's got the ability to do something we've never seen before. And if you're making me choose one, who would I rather? I'd rather Connor McDavid. And that means I'm back in the Edmonton Oilers here. Similar with our picks yesterday. I picked the Oilers, you picked the Flames. It just, one person gives you an opportunity to see something that we've never seen before. And I'm pro that all of the time.
There could have been questions previously where you're saying, okay, hey, man, I remember having this discussion a couple years ago where there was actually a question of who do you want in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
McKinnon or McDavid?
Yes.
Because McKinnon plays a better defensive game. He's more physical. And up until this year, I think that was a valid argument.
You can throw Crosby into that conversation.
For
right?
sure.
If you had one game, who do you want? And a lot of people were like, hey, Crosby, Bergeron, McKinnon.
Of the younger guys, though, yeah. It was a discussion I remember having on these airwaves, McKinnon or McDavid. And I side with McKinnon because he did those other things where McDavid didn't do those in the playoffs up until the last series. Up until the last series where he started to throw the body around, where he started to do even more special things. He's more tenacious. He's aggressive on that forecheck and that will to win. I say the Flames, but there is something special going on here with McDavid. Can he continue it? Is going to be, you know, that game 7 to me was kind of like his MJ moment where you're saying, all right, this guy was not going to take a loss. He was not going to. He was going to do whatever he could. If we see more of those, I think there's a lot of hockey fans that would say, yeah, I want to side with greatness. Do Canucks fans feel that same way, though? That's the question I have, and I don't think they do. My opinion is you want to say, all right, how do we, in this market, limit the damage? And limiting the damage means Calgary wins. Really? Hate fuels, you know, playoff fandom as well. Like I said, playoff, any sort of sport, tribalism matters.
Well, I think ultimately everyone's going to kind of fall in the category of what Raj from Cloverdale is saying, 650, 650. I'd rather see both beat each other up so bad that the winner gets swept by the Avs, right? It's okay to root for one of these teams for the next 7 games, 5 games, however long it takes. But immediately it's going to flip to the other side, St. Louis or Colorado.
I hate you. I hate you. I don't even know you. And I hate your guts. I hope all the bad things in life happen to you and nobody else but you.
That's my opinion on this topic.
You'll see Zach Cassian like, hate you. You'll see Matt Tkachuk, hate you.
I can't wait for Ice-T to appear at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome at some point.
Good work there by our guy Eddie Gregory running the show today. But yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be just like, hey, in here and now, let's see a lot of excitement, a lot of entertainment. And then as soon as the series is over, guys are shaking their hands. People are already, go Colorado, go St. Louis. Yeah. Whoever advances.
Down with Edmonton or Calgary, whoever makes
immediately
it.
Immediately flipping feelings.
We got a lot of reaction coming in. Bobby from Richmond saying, Randeep, good call. I sense some sarcasm here because Vancouver has ever built for the future with all their great prospects in the system, the ones that are coming up. Can't wait to see what Jet Wu, Jack Rathbone, can do as a combo. Hey, that's valid, Bobby. The prospects aren't there for the Canucks.
Yeah.
But if you're making this pick, would you rather? I would rather, hey, the Flames might have prospects like Connor Zary and all these other guys.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's real? Connor McDavid is real. Leon Draisaitl are real. There's the hope for the Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks. But if there's success from the Edmonton Oilers perspective, that is real, folks.
Let's get back to the inbox here. 650, 650, unsigned text here. Taking Edmonton. Connor McDavid having as much success as possible will shut up the morons who think Matthews is better.
Okay. So, cheer for Edmonton so you can get back at Toronto. That's very much like that Chappelle clip.
I hate you!
I feel like we're going to get a lot of mileage out of that clip over the next seven games.
I hate you. I don't even know you.
Well done.
This one, Marcus in Gibson's. I definitely want the Flames to win simply because they weren't given a lottery pick every other year for a decade.
Okay.
And we've talked about this too. Like, Calgary, in theory, because there's this idea, it's like, oh, you have to, not tank, but like you need high picks to have success. Calgary's been the antithesis of that. They have done it completely different way, and it shows that there's not one way to have success to build a team here. And if you're really a Calgary backer, yeah, there's a lot of qualities to look at that and say, they just did it differently, and there's not one script every team has to follow for a rebuild.
Well, there's that aspect. There's also the patience aspect, right? They had a lot of patience with their core, which is something that I think a lot of people that followed that team, reported on that team, works in the industry, or fans, were saying, Johnny Gaudreau's got to pack his bags. Like, you can't win with this guy. Now, you're in the second round of the playoffs playing your biggest rival, and if you make it to the Western Conference Final, that's a sense of achievement, and that happens because of patience. You have patience. You make some bold moves as well. So, you know, Elias Lindholm, Dougie Hamilton trade, that was something that a lot of people were kind of shaking their heads at and saying, why would you do that? In the end, it works out. But it's been bold moves, patience, and, yeah, not having that number one pick paying off for that team.
Now, mind you, they were, you know, rather active to go get a Dougie Hamilton, giving up a first-round pick and a second-round pick. But it's like, yeah, you go do those things, too, you know, when those opportunities present themselves. But it wasn't as if it was like a top three pick or something like that, given up for Dougie Hamilton.
We got a lot of this sentiment coming in as well. They both suck. Should be a good hockey, but never cheering for either, especially Calgary. That's Torgy coming in with that one. You don't have to cheer for him, but if you had to pick one is the question.
It's so funny seeing the reasons why people are choosing one of the sides, Darcy and Poco. I hope the Oilers win. I don't ever want to see a Kachuk win the cup.
Okay.
I hate you. I don't even know you.
See, I knew this would be a topic in this city. Vancouver, until you've won, you're saying, I don't want you to win.
I hate you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Darcy getting after it for one person. That is great. This one, MJ moment. Calm down, Randy. McDavid needs to win consistently in the playoffs.
Okay.
Before we crown him. Look, it wasn't an MJ career, just an MJ moment.
No, it was a moment where the guy wanted to win to such a level, and LeBron's had those moments. All the greats have had those moments. If we consider Connor McDavid to be the best in the game, which he is, he's going to have those moments, folks. I didn't compare his career to Michael Jordan. I know that. I'm one of the biggest MJ fans around. I won't be doing that.
650, 650. Keep coming in with the thoughts. Lots of good ones here. I couldn't ever cheer for the Flames, no matter what the possible, quote-unquote, situation is. Yes, I have a hate on for them, just like the Bruins or Leafs.
So I hope all the bad things in life happen to you and nobody else but you.
I love that there's no mention of the Edmonton Oilers in there. It's just like,
oh yeah, no.
Right, we're not going to acknowledge that they're going to win, but I want everything terrible to happen to the Calgary Flames. This one, I want to see extreme bad blood by the end of this series to the point that the NHL doesn't trust the Oilers and Flames to do a handshake line.
I hate you.
Can you imagine that? That'd be straight out of WWE.
Oh yeah.
It's like you have like an army of bodyguards between the players as they do handshakes. Like the guys that used to bring out Bill Goldberg back in the day.
The Yellow Jackets. Yeah. It's like he's bigger than all of you. Who is protecting
who? Why are these individual security guards?
It's like me. Like guys my size walking alongside Bill Goldberg.
Who does Milan Lucic have his Dale Weiss moment with in the handshake line? Remember a few years ago when Boston lost in seven games to Montreal?
Oh, yeah.
In the handshake line?
Who would it be for the Oilers?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good. We got to ask
Ryan, Zach Hyman.
Could be. Could be.
No, I feel like you go deeper down the lineup.
It's pretty deep.
Yeah,
I'm not Hyman, though, but
yeah, I mean, not
Ryan
Hyman.
Well, depending on what Puljujärvi's playing in the lineup, he might be deeper down the lineup. They don't trust him very much these days.
Is Kyle Turris in the lineup?
No, he hasn't been seeing action.
Yeah, no.
He's really deep.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You got to go like
he's really, really down there.
Deep in the lineup. But we'll talk more about the Oilers lineup later on in the show with Cam Moon, who will join us, play-by-play voice of the Oilers on 630 CHED. Also, Tim Hunter will join us in the 2 o'clock hour. Longtime Calgary Flame and Vancouver Canuck, obviously living through those Battle of Alberta, the peak of it. We'll talk to Tim Hunter at 2 o'clock. Mike McKenna will join us in about 15 minutes as well here on The People's Show. On Canuck Central last night, Satyr Shah and Dan Riccio, Bruce Boudreau joined the crew to talk about many things, fresh off of the announcement that he's coming back for next season with your Vancouver Canucks. Early takeaways from that, I was a little puzzled just how different the messaging was from what we've heard from Jim Rutherford. Because it was, you know, Rutherford and Alvin, their opinion was, it's like, yeah, the 57 games was nice and players deserve a lot of credit. It's not going to sway the conversation of what we're trying to build here. And yet you hear Bruce Boudreau and it was very much, and look, I understand management. Managers are always going to think one way. Coaches always think a different way. Players always think a different way. And owners think a different way. It's just the reality of the NHL ecosystem. And that's why it's so important to make sure everyone's getting their voice heard. But it was just interesting to hear how, and rightfully so, proud Bruce Boudreau was of the accomplishments they had of that 57-game run. But it did come across as like, hey, like it's not as bad as it seems here.
Yeah, there was a sense of, hey, being proud of what you've done, right? And I think with management, you have to be pretty blunt in your assessment. You've got the worldview,
mm-hmm.
right? You're looking at the bird's eye view of the organization. And to a certain extent, Bruce Boudreau he's kind of in the weeds, kind of working on the ground level. And Rutherford's got to make his assessment from an office tower, so to speak. And I think yesterday those comments that Bruce Boudreau, and you know, if you haven't listened to the conversation, go back to Canuck Central.
We'll play a couple of things back here.
We'll play some things as well. But I think the tone was, hey, yeah, sure, there's things to improve, but we're still proud of what we did. There's a certain style and there's certain accomplishments that we had. Shouldn't be swept under the rug that, you know, the goalie, and we'll get to those comments specifically, that the goalie was the only reason that they won. And listen, we've talked about that. I think there's a lot of conversation in this market of Thatcher Demko, stolen games, how much he matters to this team, and ultimately what it meant to him down the stretch as well, as we saw him getting a lot of work. But from a coach's perspective, if you're listening to that and you're Bruce Boudreau, what are you thinking? You're probably saying, wait a second. I come into this market, and everybody's just saying, yeah, hot goalie. That's the only reason they won. What does that say about what I changed around here as well, right? I'm not putting words in Bruce Boudreau's mouth, but what I'm saying is, if that's the narrative in this market, it's only a goalie, obviously any individual is going to be like, wait a second. No, there was more than that. Do you remember what was happening in Vancouver before Boudreau got to town? The negativity? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Boudreau changed that. The style of play, you can be proud of those defensive moments, but I kind of got a sense of hold your horses a little bit. Of course, we got a good goalie. We're very proud to have one of the best goalies in the league, but all good teams rely on goaltending to win. You don't see, you know, playoff teams or successful playoff teams have a bad goalie. It simply doesn't. So I think there was a little bit maybe of balancing of saying, yeah, good goalies. Good teams have good goalies, and it's something we shouldn't apologize.
Well, I think it's the conversation we have all the time, just how much money, resources you dedicate to that position. Because do you want your goalies to influence your play, or do you want your play to influence the goalies, right? And it's a fine statement to say, hey, all the teams that have successful runs and win cups have good goaltending. But there's a distinct difference between having a good goalie and getting good goaltending. And for a lot of people, the belief is you can do the latter by having structured, competent, cohesive play in front of you.
Yeah.
That you can go find a Darcy Kemper and drop him in and say, hey, we're going to thrive now in this situation. Or you can go whatever, like a Jeremy Swayman can rise up, or an Omar can have success, or an Ottinger. You can go it that way because the talent at the position is so deep, and you don't have to be a Shesterkin where it's like, we're relying on you to do everything, to keep us afloat, and maybe we win a couple of moments and we pull out ahead, but you're going to have to win the lion's share of the moments. And I think there's a concern here in Vancouver from fans that the Canucks might become that version where, yeah, you got star power and Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, all this stuff, but it shouldn't have to just be thrust upon the shoulders of Thatcher Demko all the time. And, you know, to Boudreau's point, it says, hey, if you have a goalie, you don't apologize for it. And this is what he had to say about the good goaltending and how he's not apologizing for it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a point of contention. I mean, I agree that we rely on the goalie, but that's, you know, every team relies on their goalie. We had, you know, I mean, we had some deficiencies in other places, but I mean, our goalie would come up big, and every team needs a good goalie to win. I don't care who you are. You could be Colorado. If they don't get good goaltending from Kemper, they're not winning no matter how good they are. So I sort of poo-poo the assessment that, you know, your goalie kept you in it and everything. I mean, he was great, but I've never seen a team that was any good didn't have a great goaltender that kept him in it most nights. And you're going to see, no matter who ends up winning the Stanley Cup this year, that it's usually the goalie that ends up being the best player on the ice. So he is who he is. We're lucky to have him, and I'm not going to apologize for having great goaltending.
It's Bruce Boudreau on Canucks Central last night. So head coach not apologizing for good goaltending. And it is going to be the bedrock on which the Vancouver Canucks are built upon. You know, having Thatcher Demko, having Quinn Hughes, having Elias Pettersson. And the work that still needs to be done is still, you know, you want to have that great goalie, but you don't want him to have to win.
Yeah.
And if he's an 8 out of 10, your chances to win a game just completely sink. And it shouldn't always have to be on Thatcher Demko.
No, it shouldn't. And the comparison I've used in the past with the Canucks, what I thought they would be heading into this year before the change to Bruce Boudreau, was kind of Winnipeg with Connor Hellebuyck, where you're requiring all-world goaltending because defensively you're pretty loose, right? Tyler Myers, Tucker Pullman, a couple of defensemen that used to be on that team as well. You've got all the power in the top six, but defensively, and the way you play defensively, is too loose. You don't want that, because look at Winnipeg. Now they're probably going after a coach that has more structure in a Barry Trotz type of individual. You're saying, we can't rely on this goaltender, because at some point, if we overwork him, he's going to kind of lose himself as well. And I think with Thatcher Demko, it's very similar, where you identify, all right, you've got one of the best in the game. Defensively, you need help. Offensively, you've got some firepower. You're going to have to improve over that. But to me, I think that's a coach that's proud of what he was able to do. And that's natural. I don't think that's a criticism. I don't think that's a division. I don't think that's a something that's different in philosophy. That's essentially somebody saying, hey, we got work to do. And Bruce Boudreau mentioned that in that clip there, but also in other parts of that interview, that we're going to have to make changes. But yeah, goaltending, if we got one of these guys, we're happy with it. We're proud of it. He's going to steal us games, but you can't rely on it too often. That was the problem this past year. Moving forward, you got to change that. And that's where the structure conversation comes in. Can you exit your zone, you know, smoother? Can you make sure that you're not sitting in your zone so much? Can you keep the puck in the other side of the ice more consistently? Those are things that this team is going to have to do in order to take some of the pressure off Thatcher Demko.
Vic Nizar and Randy Bjanda here on the People Show with your contributions as well. Get to more of your thoughts on the other side here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to the People Show. Vic Nizar and Randy Bjanda will connect with Mike McKenna, NHL analyst from dailyfaceoff.com. Longtime NHL goalie and former Vancouver Canuck as well. Coming up in just a couple of moments. So last night, we'll talk about last night's games as well. Tampa Bay Lightning. Just do it again. Ho-hum. Nikita Kucherov shows up, and all those worries about his efforts in round one, which now come with, he had his own flu game, basically. Not as much, but he essentially had a flu series.
We're bringing all the MJ comparisons today. First segment was about Connor McDavid. Second one, Nikita Kucherov. That was, I'd like to say, clinical from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mm-hmm. In the sense that scoring chances in the favor of the Florida Panthers. That's great. They ate a lot of pressure. It felt very scrambled at moments from the Tampa Bay Lightning in their own end at certain parts. But do they ever panic? Never. You get that unbelievable assist by Kucherov where he makes Tampa Bay's top two defensemen look like beer leaguers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, like, such an unbelievable play. And then beyond that, fourth line stepping up. Just committed to offense and defense. So good. No panic. It felt like their blood pressure was just, like, just resting heartbeat while they were playing that game, man. That's what the Tampa Bay Lightning are.
What's fascinating to me now about this team, and we'll talk about it with Mike McKenna here in just a second, but it feels like they kind of know how to win the game rather than just play the game. And what I mean by that, and like we've called them professional, which is true, but it feels like they know like one guy tonight is going to be on. And they have so many different cast of characters to say, hey, tonight's going to be Hedman's game. Tonight's going to be Stamkos' game. Tonight's going to be Braden Point. Last night it was Nikita Kucherov. And how do you do everything to support that one guy who's going? And you get 17 other people willing to buy into that idea of like, hey, Kucherov's on it today. Let's go get in the right lanes for him. We'll be ready. And all we got to do is, hey, block our shots when we need to, be ready. But Nikita Kucherov is going to take over this game, and we have to be prepared for when he's going to do something magical. Corey Perry was there, Johnny on the spot to do it. And you go back to round one, and you know Victor Hedman had his big game, and Vasilevsky was there. It just feels like they know how to just channel the energy amongst each other to say, hey, this guy's going to go be special tonight. We got to support him. Next game, it might be me. Next game, it might be a Braden or a Sir Riley game or something like that. They just have so many different guys who can just excel on one given night, and everyone just kind of clicks in and says, oh, it's this guy's night tonight.
You did mention a name by mistake there, but I think it shows that even without Braden Point, even without that player who is ruled out for game two as well, it matters to this team. But at the same time, they believe in each other to a certain point where they're saying, yeah, next man up. And we're not talking about like, you know, 13th forward up. We're talking about their stars mm-hmm. are like next man up. Next game, Steven Stamkos could go off. And that's the faith you have with the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's something that the Florida Panthers have to kind of earn in the NHL. They've got some really high-end players, but there's no certainty with them. With the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know it's coming. You know one of those guys is going to bring it.
Vic Nizar, Randy Janda, on an exciting day. We're getting ready for the Battle of Alberta, and also it's a Wednesday. We always get excited to talk to Mike McKenna from DailyFaceoff.com, NHL analyst and former NHL goalie as well. Mike, how are you?
Well, I am doing lovely. It's kind of been nice to have about 12 hours off, it feels like, between games. You know what I mean? So, doing good, man. We've seen some good hockey so far here in game, you know, the first game of the series last night, and going to see more of that tonight in the NHL playoffs.
Just get that mental reset to be like, oh, man, so much hockey the last 5 days. Just need a little bit of a break and get right back at it later this evening for what should be a emotional charge series, the Battle of Alberta. When you think of this series or just this rivalry, what stands out to you?
Well, you know, it's 30 years in the making, and I'm not from the province of Alberta, but I'd sure like to be there right now. I can't imagine what it's like to be boots on the ground and have the feeling in the air walking into either building in this series. And part of that is because the two teams have been so competitive against one another, especially this season. I mean, each team won two games. You know, Calgary has at times been able to contain Edmonton and vice versa. And I think realistically, this is just what everybody was hoping for. And consider myself in that mix as well, because, you know, I look at Calgary and how deep they are and how they can play any type of game you want versus Edmonton, whose game has only grown under Jay Woodcroft, become more consistent, more direct, and seen Connor McDavid, of course, take things to really another level. So, I'm just really excited for this. And guys, I didn't even mention goaltending, you know? So that should really speak to my level of excitement.
Well, let's talk goaltending, though, because Jacob Markstrom, we know he's a Vezina finalist. Vancouver knows him really well. This is a guy that's going to play at an elite level, and his numbers back that up. He wasn't tested very much in that Dallas series, but when he was called upon, he was very, very solid with a .943 save percentage. On the other side, is it fair to say that Mike Smith is potentially one of the biggest X factors in the series?
I think so, and I hate to say it, but health is always a concern. You know, like if you're the Edmonton Oilers, there's nothing more on earth than you're hoping than Mike Smith stays healthy. And I think part of what Smith does so well, especially come playoff time, I mean, if I remember right, I saw the statistic, he's got the second highest save percentage career in NHL postseason, like ever. And that's Herculean. Well, the reason being for me is that Mike Smith's game is very much built for playoffs in that he's not overly aggressive. He likes to stay deep, and it's harder to come by goals in playoffs. There's not as many rush chances. Teams do a good job of packing the middle. They block shots. So, you know, a lot of times you're facing, you know, one opportunity rather than rebound chances or rushes. And for Smith, who likes to play deeper, that lets him shine because he's got great reflexes. He can gobble up the first shot, not have to worry about a rebound. And then you look at the flip side of it, and Jacob Markstrom, as everybody in Vancouver knows, he's world-class. I mean, he's going to be a Vezina finalist for sure and led the league in shutouts, but that's because he put the work in for me as a Canuck. You know, it's what he did with Ian Clark that set the stage for the success that he's having now with the Calgary Flames. And he's continued with their goaltending coaching group as well, Jason LaBarbera, Jordan Siglett. I think this is going to be a big-time matchup of the goalies. Smith was really good in the first round. I think Markstrom was almost as good as Jake Ottinger, and who could have been as good as Jake Ottinger in that first round. Markstrom did what he had to do, but I love how he was able to focus and just worry about his game when the guy at the other end was standing on his head. That is not always easy to do.
You know, we were talking about this yesterday, just the style difference for Calgary here, going from Dallas to now a bit more high-paced team in Edmonton. For Jacob Markstrom, because there wasn't a lot of work, he had to be sharp in that time, but the transition into this series, like the workload could really spike up. Is that something that could be a concern for him?
I don't think so. I mean, he's had plenty of work previously, and I think that what, you know, it kind of riffs on what I said earlier. Like, I really admire his ability to stay calm in those moments and not overthink things and not try too hard in the first round. Again, when Ottinger was just superhuman on the other side. But he will face, in my eyes, I think he'll get more shots against Edmonton. He better, you know. I mean, Dallas is a team that relies on 1.5 lines to be able to get their offense going and a couple D versus, you know, Edmonton, who to me is a little bit deeper than Dallas. I think they don't quite get the credit they deserve. I think the depth has been improved in Edmonton, but really the top two lines there are world-class. And, you know, it remains to be seen. We don't know if Dreisaitl is going to spend a whole lot of time at center. He may play wing alongside McDavid, so you might even have a super line to contend with. So I think Markstrom's ready for it. It's not going to phase him. And in some ways, I think a couple more shots may not be a bad thing for him.
The divisional playoff format is finally paying some dividends here. For a couple of years, we didn't really know what to expect. We weren't seeing those matchups. So you got the Battle of one side. You got the Battle of Florida on the other. Take us back to your career, Mike. When you're talking about rivalries, whether it was the AHL level or the NHL level, what was the biggest rivalry that you were a part of?
Guys, you know what? It actually was in college for me.
Okay.
And I always relate back to this because I went to St. Lawrence University. It's in a small town in Canton, New York. We were 20 minutes from the Canadian border from Ontario. And our rival was Clarkson University, 10 miles down the road, which, boy, I forgive me. I think that's like 18 kilometers. Listen to my mathematics here. I apologize. I'm trying to help.
You're good. You're good.
Fly. but anyway, like a really close rival. And it almost didn't matter what you did during the regular season or playoffs, that as long as you beat Clarkson in the regular season, life was good. I mean, I met my wife on a Clarkson night. You know what I mean? It's that type of magical event that you play them twice a year and you would never forget those moments. So, I think that was really the biggest rivalry that I was a part of because the whole North Country in New York just stood still for those games. And, you know, it was unique and it was special. And you had these two small schools in these tiny towns in upstate New York and kind of had that Friday night. I can't talk today, everybody. Friday night lights vibe to it, almost like high school football in Texas with the two, you know, next door neighbors going at it. So I always look back at that and think that college rivalry I had at St. Lawrence against Clarkson was the most heated one I was ever a part of.
What was the feeling for you before a game and what was the mood in the community after a loss?
Yeah, before the game it was all kinds of nervous energy. And it's the same type of energy I felt before game sevens in my pro career. You know, I played in a few of those and it's a weird feeling because there's also some finality to game sevens and to big games in general that you prep and prep and prep. And it's almost like for big tests and you think, you know, everything. And you finally get to the point where you just stop studying and going, you know what, I've done everything I can. Just let the chips fall. And it's almost a relief to just drop the puck and get it going. Now, after a loss, though, I mean, I can remember our head coach, Joe Marsh, walking around going, half of these, he's from, by the way, he's from Boston, so heavy Boston accent. Half of these people think I'm the village idiot up here. And he would be, he'd be so worked up if we lost a game at, against Clarkson. So, you know, you feel it, but you let it slide off your back. And especially for Edmonton, Calgary, that's a seven-game series. You know you still have life unless it's the final game.
Okay, so one of the classic Battle of Alberta moments of most recent past is Mike Smith versus Cam Talbot. Did you ever take on Dustin Trelin, Mike Walsh, or the vaunted Dan Weinrieb from Clarkson during your years?
I saw Mike Walsh get kicked out of a bar by other teammates. he tried to walk into a St. Lawrence bar on our campus because Clarkson didn't have any girls at their school. It's a tech school, engineering school. They have no girls there, so they'd all try to come to our campus and. He was politely asked to leave the bar.
Okay.
Despite having a mutual friend, he was told by one of our captains that it might be best if he just moved along for the evening. So I didn't have to do the dirty work there. The only fight I ever had was against a 6'4", 6'5", monster named Tom Lawson when I was in the ECHL with the Las Vegas Wranglers, and he was playing for the San Diego Gulls. We met at Center Ice in Las Vegas my first year pro, and we danced for about 15 seconds like two drunk polar bears and fell to the ice, and nothing happened. But from that moment forward, I was a folk hero in the city of Las Vegas.
That's awesome. Talking to Mike McKenna from DailyFaceoff.com, former NHLer and longtime goalie in both the AHL and the NHL. So talking about last night's game, we were talking about Tampa Bay just before you came on, and it feels like they just know how to play the game differently. Not that it's, you know, it's significantly better or anything, but it feels like they know on one night one guy can be the star, and they've got so many different guys that can be that, and whatever they have to do to support that one person, and last night it happened to be Nikita Kucherov, they just know that this guy on his best night will help the rest of the team kind of get there. Is that kind of fair to say, the way they've kind of trended through these playoffs with their experience of having won so many games now?
I think you're spot on, and I think it all comes from leadership. It comes from the coach on down. You have to really pay attention to what the coaches say before, during, and after games. And I love now that the television broadcast crews have access to the coaches in-game. We are getting those interviews live now in the heat of the moment. And John Cooper is one of the better interviews. He doesn't give canned ham answers. He stands up there and says what their team is doing. And I think that that just shows a calm awareness. And I think the players feed off that, because if he can be honest to the viewers, you know, he's walking in the room and just saying, like, guys, we're not good enough. We need to do this, this, and this, or just we're not going to make it, you know. And the players all know that. And they also have something of a weight off their shoulders because they've already won two Stanley Cups. They know how to do it. They have the experience, and they've been through adversity previously. And that's like Andrei Vasilevsky in the first round. I did not think he was very good for the first 5.5 games. And then the switch flipped, and he was unbeatable for the last little bit of Game 6 and in Game 7 against the Maple Leafs. And I think that that is really where you draw from. It's your experience. It's from your coaching staff. It's from the way they project your systems and what you're going to do. And it filters, you know. Even Nick Paul, who's new to the organization, they had him mic'd up last game here in the States. We could listen to him. I mean, totally in tune with his team. And that's exactly what a GM wants. You pick up players that you know fit within your mold, and every night it can be a different hero for the Lightning.
Yeah, we hear often in this city of building a winning culture. You see Tampa Bay, they've built it, and a player that comes into the roster almost immediately kind of gets it. It starts with the leadership group, as you mentioned, Mike. And Mike, we talked about, you know, Tampa, which is a juggernaut. They've won two cups in a row. Colorado Avalanche, they win in overtime yesterday. Josh Manson gets the winner. And 13 shots to zip in the playoffs, or sorry, in the overtime. Can they be stopped? Like, that was a very, you know, St. Louis did the best that they could to get it back in that game. They force OT. But the level that Colorado hit in that OT, can anybody match that?
Good question. And I'm going to give you reasons why I think St. Louis Blues can not only compete in this series, but win the series, is that Colorado absolutely dominated game one. Well, look what they did last year against the Vegas Golden Knights in the second round. They crushed them 7-1 first game. Then they went on to win the second game of the series, and they won, and they ended up dropping the next four to Vegas and losing in six. Now, is Colorado constructed better this year? Yes, I think they absolutely are. I think bringing in players like Lehkonen and Manson have really helped that club. You know, even having Cogliano in the lineup last night, I thought was a boost for that team. But they still have to get over that hump. And you look at St. Louis coming in, first game in the series, on the road, at altitude, against a really well-rested Colorado team that's had a full week to prepare. And I understand St. Louis had a few days as well, but they had a pretty grueling six-game series against the Minnesota Wild. And I think game one was really just stacked in a way that it was bound for Colorado to come out victorious in it. And the thing that was good for the Blues is that Jordan Binnington gave them life. He was outstanding. It was the best game I've seen him play since the 2019 Cup run. And I think that the Blues' power play was 1-for-1, and it showed that special teams can still carry them. So if St. Louis can clean up their 5-on-5 play, slow down Colorado in the neutral zone, St. Louis needs to limit their turnovers, yes, they can play against the Colorado Avalanche. But what we saw last night was, for my money, the premier team in the NHL doing what they do best. But the Avalanche only won in overtime.
A big worry, though, is, and you mentioned Binnington, he had a phenomenal game. I just kind of worry, it's like, hey, did you throw away a big game from one of your players, like an elite performance from Jordan Binnington, and you don't get the result from that? Or are you looking at it as like, hey, if he's back, then he's back for the rest of the series?
Yeah, well, you're just hoping that that was a sign of things to come and that he doesn't have to do that again. You know, if Binnington's going to have to make 51 saves every night, this series is going to be done, and it's going to be a waste of 7 days again. Not eight, a waste of 7 days again. So I think the Blues are pretty well aware that they can't just come in and lay a defensive egg like that, and they can't get outworked. Like, Colorado was hungry last night. They were hitting. They were physically engaged. They controlled the board battles, and I think they fed off the fans. That arena, Ball Arena in Denver, was rocking last night. And so I think for St. Louis, look at it this way. If they get a split on the road and can bring it back to St. Louis, where they've got a big boost from their fans too, I think they'd take that. So we'll have to see how tomorrow night plays out, but it's awful tough to bet against the Avalanche right now.
Talking to Mike McKenna from DailyFaceoff.com, NHL analyst and longtime goalie. We haven't spoken to you since round one concluded. When you look back and the teams that were eliminated, you know, we have so many conversations about, hey, this team moving out, this team's got to try to jump in next year. How many of the round one eliminated teams do you look at and say, hey, they might not make the playoffs next year, and this was kind of their chance?
You know, that's tough to say. By the way, I picked the right teams in my bracket. I went 8-0.
Oh, so. Wow. There you go. Yeah, you and Gretz are rolling 100% here.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's going to happen for this round. But, you know, I think you kind of – you got to look to Dallas and think, where are they going to be next year? I mean, that team's they've got to boost their scoring. They're going to have to figure out coaching. Rick Bonus may or not be coming back there. You don't know what to expect. I think that's one place to look. I think even Pittsburgh, man, there's big question marks with that team for me. You know, you look at the amount of unrestricted free agents there and big ones. I mean, Malkin, Letang, Rust. I mean, even Rodriguez played a pretty big role for that club. And it's going to be hard to keep them. We saw a report come out, you know, yesterday. I believe it was Elliot Friedman that broke, and or maybe it was, I can't remember if it was Friedman or Russo that said it, but you're looking 3x5 million for Letang or Malkin, if they both want to stay. I don't think that's going to cut it. So Pittsburgh, I worry. There's questions there. You know, Dallas, we'll have to see what happens. And I don't think many teams really snuck in this year, man. I feel like we had good clubs across the board, but you're going to have teams like Vancouver, who I think will be challenging next year in the mix. So those are the first ones that I think of.
Mike, we appreciate it as always, and the people always love it. Tyler texting in 650-650. Let Mike know that his fight has no video on HockeyFights.com. So,
I'm aware. I know. It was pre-YouTube.
Don't know if you have video of it, but maybe you should tweet that one out there.
Yeah, I'd have to dig it out of the air. Somebody in Vegas probably has it, but yeah, that was pre-YouTube, so I apologize to everybody. I'm not making it up. Go find the score sheet.
We appreciate it, man. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Enjoy the games.
It's at Mike McKenna 56 on Twitter if you want to go find him. And always check out his stuff, dailyfaceoff.com, and here are weekly on the People's Show.
He mentions Pittsburgh there, and we've talked about Letang, Malkin, Rust. One name that I'm really intrigued by out of Pittsburgh, Kasperi Kapanen. Final
are
year.
Are you intrigued?
I am.
Are you intrigued that it could get moved, or are you intrigued by the player?
I'm intrigued on two fronts. Like, his confidence is shot right now. There's been some reporting done out of Pittsburgh talking about how he's lost his swagger, right?
Mm-hmm.
Speedy guy, but he just wasn't there all year long. Here's an interesting thing about Kasperi Kapanen and his deal. Currently on a $3.2 million deal, but if you look at his total salary this year, it's 2.3. His qualifying offer is quite low. So, you know, A, if you make a move for him, you're probably not going to be paying him very much. B, there's even rumblings out of Pittsburgh that they might not even qualify him, that he could be a free agent. So if we're talking about potentially signing a player for nothing and it's just straight cash, obviously the city that Jim Rutherford goes to is going to probably perk their ears, because what happened? Traded him away, got him back, drafted him originally as well. So I'm intrigued by the player because he's 25 years old. This is a guy that still has some game. He should be better than he was last year. And I think he admits it, that it was a disappointing thing for him. But we're all focusing on the big names in Pittsburgh, as we should, because those are the guys that are going to really decide whether they're winning or not, or if they're doing a rebuild or a reset or whatever we're going to call it. But that's one name I look at and say, all right, if he's not qualified in Pittsburgh, there's going to be a lot of teams saying, 25-year-old player like that for free, all we got to give him salary, sign me up.
Have there been any GMs who have multiple times traded for him or anything like that?
Yeah, there's a president of hockey operations in
this
town.
Oh, right.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Drafted him, too.
Vic Nizar and Randy Janda will be back with more on the other side. Tim Hunter will join us. Former Flame and Vancouver Canuck getting ready for the Battle of Alberta. And, you know, you want to talk about a guy who's embodies the physical element of that rivalry? Not a goon, but someone who always brought the noise. Someone who's willing to back up anything he had to say. And if you want physicality in a series, you won't be able to rally some other people in the series, Tim Hunter.
How much? Eddie Gregory's done some great research here. In Battle of Alberta games, we're talking 26 games, Tim Hunter had 129 penalty minutes. We're talking playoff games, folks.
Yeah.
We're talking about the thick of the, you know, Battle of Alberta in the mid-80s, early 80s, where that was the Oilers dynasty. Man, was racking up penalty minutes, playing tough hockey.
I was going through Tim Hunter's game logs earlier today, and in one of the Battle of Alberta playoff series, I forget exactly which year it was, but he had a 10-minute misconduct in three consecutive games.
Legend.
Just
legend.
It's like twice in a row is one thing, but you know what? I'm going back out there, and I'm doing it again tonight.
I feel like, you know when we talk about the unbeatable records in sports? That might be one of them. That might be one of them.
You just know the NHL Department of Player Safety would be like, all right, can we calm this down a little bit, guys?
After the second game, he's getting suspended. There's no chance there's a third one.
Zero chance.
No chance.
You know what? We'll ask him about those three straight game misconducts on the way. He joins us next on The People Show, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.